This is Ana Ojes Castro Guzan, co-founder of Your Words STL, and you're listening to the Gift of Words podcast mini-series. Your Words STL is a 501c3 nonprofit that uses tutoring, creative writing workshops, and collaborative projects to help amplify the voices of marginalized youth. We are committed to bridging racial, cultural, and socioeconomic divides by honing the ability of people to tell their stories while providing opportunities for the community to listen. This podcast is hosted by Michelle Haberberger, Development Manager of Your Words STL.
This interview is part of our hashtag Gift of Words Giving Tuesday campaign and lecture series. We are interviewing experts in fields closely tied to the mission and vision of Your Words STL. Our guest for this episode is Gerald Burton Jr. Welcome. Thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So one thing that sets Gerald apart is that he is a lot younger than me. You are part of the generation that grew up with the technology. while the rest of us are kind of struggling to keep up. You said you're 18?
Yes, 18 years old.
And then you were recognized immediately when we said that we wanted to bring one of the younger people associated with Your Words, and we were trying to decide like someone to talk to, and your name came up immediately. So I'm really interested to talk to you. It sounds like you are quite the opinionated speaker, which will be great.
I'm glad to be here as well. And just, you know, having my words acknowledged, you know, the way that we're, I mean, I just kind of want to be able to speak for my people. And, you know, the fact that you all acknowledge me that way, it's a huge honor. And I'm very grateful for you.
Yeah, we're grateful to you for talking to us. It's interesting that you mentioned that, like, my words recognized this way. Are you talking about the poem, perhaps, that you have out there through Dream Builders for Equity?
Yes, all the poems that I was able, really not just the ones that were published or anything, but just all the poems I was able to create during the week of when Your Words came and spoke with us. Because my whole intention was to really just be able to speak freely and to be able to speak about something that I could relate to. And what more can I relate to than being, you know, a young African-American man, you know, in today's society. So I just want to be able to speak, you know, be kind of a reflection, if that makes sense, you know, for my people.
Absolutely. So it sounds like the poetry, you said they came in and spoke to us, but we haven't really talked much about what us is. So would you mind talking a little bit about who you are and how you got connected to Your Words STL? It was through Dream Builders for Equity. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Dream Builders for Equity. And Dream Builders for Equity is an organization headed by Michael Woods and Neil Richardson. You know, it was created to educate urban youth about financial stability, equity, entrepreneurship, and, you know, just overall accountability in one's destiny. And I was, you know, actually brought in by one of the former founders of the Dream Builders for Equity. And he felt like I'd be a good fit for it. But, you know, I feel like they were really trying to tap into the potential of, you know, the youth in the city of St. Louis. And that's kind of how I got connected to it. You know, I'm real grateful to be a part of the Dream Builders.
Your Words STL kind of coached you guys through the more of the creative part of it, like expressing yourself through poetry. But you guys, like, actually build stuff, right? Like you like rehab houses.
Yes. We have a few houses. We just actually completed a project on Couples Place. We have a few projects in the works, but that's also another thing that was pretty cool about Dream Builders, because we weren't just talking about, you know, equity and being in, you know, the boardrooms. We're actually outside in the street, you know, working with contractors, painters, you know, actually being real hands-on, which was an amazing opportunity as well.
What are some of the skills, like, obviously, I feel like it's its own skill set to, like, be able to communicate with contractors. I think I'd be nervous doing that. But, for you being 18 years old, had you ever used power tools before? Like, was that something that you knew how to do going in?
Not really. But, you know, I feel like it's one of those things, kind of, if you just go about it naturally and just do it, you know, obviously paying attention, you know, is real essential to the job. But if you just pay attention, you know, and do your job, it's really not that hard, you know. Specifically, like for me, with a paintbrush. My brother, he's a painter, so I kind of just watched him throughout the years paint around the house, mm-hmm. and I picked it up, and it was almost like a pencil to me, and I just, you know, I just went with it. You know, the whole contracting aspect for me, I kind of pick it up. I mean, even now I have like side jobs that I do, but it's almost like my poetry is kind of expression.
That's interesting. So it's like the construction process and the creative process, it sounds like there's really not that much of a difference for you.
It's really not, because essentially, like I've said before, I feel like you're still telling a story, either, you know, mm-hmm. on paper or, you know, within, you know, creating homes. Because, for example, my home, I'm pretty sure it's like a third generation home. It's probably one of the oldest homes that's been on this block. And for me, I understand the feeling that I get from writing. And I know the feeling that I want to provide through, you know, creating these houses for people. You know, I mean, just seeing people happy, talking to people who Dream Builders has been able to provide for, you know, it's filled me with a sense of pride, because I know I am, you know, giving someone opportunity to, you know, live their dreams.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned like the age of your home, and you equate that to a story. That is really, really cool. It's almost like these homes that you guys work on, they're also very old, right? Like, it's not like you guys start from scratch. Like, you're taking old homes and trying to restore them. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a whole lot of restoration. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you feel like you are trying to find the story in those houses as well?
Very much so. I mean, because even when I'm there, I'm asking three main questions. Like, you can ask Mike and Neil, I'm probably asking so many questions, they know nothing about. Like, I'm asking, what kind of brick did they use? What type of mortar did they put in? It's just everything. I'm just so curious, because I just want to know the story behind the house. Because to me, it's almost like it's like a book.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically about to add a new chapter. And, you know, you can't have one book without, you know, having the prequel or whatever. So, you know, you got to keep it in order. So
I'm a former English teacher, and you're speaking in metaphor right now, and it's just making my heart very, very happy. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for all that. What do you think? I mean, I'm sure you've learned a ton of new skills, but what has been the most fun and what has been the most challenging for you to take on in this process?
The most fun, like I said, just being able to, like I said, when we're in person in the process, you know, being able to wake up every day and knowing that I'm about to go change someone's life. It was very fun. And changed my life as well, you know, receiving certain education and receiving the knowledge that I did. So that was amazing. As far as challenging, I probably have to say maybe hands-on at first, because like I say, it's a lot of attention to detail that you have to have. And then when you're working with professionals, you know, they're not treating you like you're a kid. They're not looking at me like, oh, he's 17 years old, he's going to mess up. No, you're working on a house and you actually have to be about your business. So, you know, having to have that certain professionalism, actually, you know, being able to do your job the way that you're supposed to, that was probably the most challenging.
I mean, it sounds like such an incredible opportunity. How did you get connected to it?
I was brought in, like I said, from one of the former founders of Dream Builders. Like I said, I knew him since I was a kid. And, you know, he referred me because he felt like I'd be, you know, great for the program, being able to blend my personality, you know, with the other kids in the program as well. I feel like it would be a great fit for me, and that, you know, I fit in perfectly, and I feel like I mesh very well with the group. Like I said, I love everybody that's in, you know, Dream Builders. Like Mike and Neil, they're like, you know, big brothers, and everybody else, they're like my brothers and sisters. You know, I love everybody in this program.
So how does it work? Is there like cohorts of young people who go through, and like, are you all together? Like, how does that work? How many people, young people, are you working with on one house?
Yes, actually, because Dream Builders, there was a cohort before us. Like, there was a core group that Mike and Neil and Eric Wilson had before us. They were doing work, and in the year that I got brought in, which was last summer, it was just a new group of kids ranging from Riverview, Live for Life, Melville, and then Career Academy. And then we were the core group in the classroom, you know, receiving that education, you know, talking to different people, talking to your words, you know, when we had our creative writing week, people from US Bank, you know, because Neil had his connections. And then we, as a whole group, we were going to work on these properties and houses. Like, for us, our group, the couple's place that we just finished up, that is like our house that we finished work on and are hoping to sell sometime soon.
So is it like for sale right now? Like, how do you get it? Like, if somebody, like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's on the market right now. Actually, you can Google it, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I mean, we're trying to find someone to purchase it. I don't think it's been bought just yet, but yeah. It's a lovely home.
how has this influenced where you see yourself going in the future? Like, you've gained all these skills, you're working with all these other young people. Where do you see this taking you?
Like, I actually joked at the poetry reading that we had. I said, I feel like I'm going to be a billionaire now.
Is that you? I was actually there. You made me bust up laughing when you said that.
Yes, that was me. That was me. I said, I'm going to be a billionaire. I've always been someone who didn't necessarily want to be routine or, you know, live to other people's expectations. I didn't want to be the person, okay, you're going to go to school, play sports, or get a scholarship, go to college, 4 years, graduate, get a degree, blah, blah, blah. Why not be able to accomplish all these amazing things? Why not be able to own a house? Why not be able to publish a book by the age of 17? They just, you know, gave me a sense of ambition and like a sense of I can accomplish my dreams now. I don't have to wait. I don't have to go the routine route because I've been able to accomplish a lot of things that people have never been able to, especially people, you know, in my community, you know, people where I live. Having a sense of pride and I can take my destiny into my own hands, that's something that it filled me with.
You mentioned how you read the poetry out loud and I threw in that I was there. We are talking about the Dreams Made Real event, right?
Yes.
Yeah. When was that? February?
I believe so, yeah.
Man, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. I mean, that was one of the, well, for your words, STL, it was the last in-person event that they could do before the virus. And I think one of you guys even like cracked some kind of joke about it because nobody really knew how bad it was going to go. And the whole crowd just went, ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that experience like for you to take your words, which were, was reading the one poem that's been published. It's so raw and honest. What was it like for you to take that, get in front of a crowd of, man, what was it, like 200 people, and read it for that crowd? What was that like?
Well, for sure, it was an honor, you know, to be able to have my, I don't know, be able to share my words, you know, my thoughts and my feelings with that many people. Because for me, I feel like writing and expression has always been easy because nobody can tell you how you feel better than yourself. So it's easy. Like I can literally go up there and pretty much say anything. I could say the sky is red, the sky isn't blue. Like it's literally, and people will feel it because they're gonna be like, oh my God, why does he think that? Why is that his perspective? So being able to share my perspective with, you know, this crowd of people who is including my mother, you know, my friends and stuff like that, then being able to hear like, wow, this is how Gerald feels, it felt amazing. Because like I said, I felt like I was up there and I was representing my people. And it was almost like a badge of honor. Like I'm not just speaking for Gerald Alonzo Burton Jr. I'm speaking for, you know, everyone. I'm speaking for all the 17-year-old African American males in the world. I'm speaking for African American women, the parents. I just felt like I was a reflection of what we go through on a day-to-day basis, and I was just honored to be up there.
You know, for me watching you guys, like I think some of my favorite moments, although I'm sure the young people themselves didn't like it very much, like when one of them would be a little nervous or hesitant to perform, the way you guys just all kind of rooted each other on and supported each other, it was so obvious the kind of bond you guys have. Can you talk a little bit about like about that part of it? What has it been like for you to get close to this group of young people who it sounds like come from all over the St. Louis area?
It was really cool because, like I say, I went into it with, like I say, with expectations of being able to make connections and make friends. But it got to the point where I was like, literally, if Dream Builders had like a school, I would probably drop out of my high school and just be able to attend Dream Builders High School every single day. Because, like I say, being able to mesh with these people, understand their personalities, understand, you know, how they feel, you know, it really all came after pretty much like the creative writing week, because for one, we didn't know that everybody was as skilled in writing as they were. But like for me, I always think like everyone, I feel like everyone is an amazing writer just because, like I said, you can tell your own story.
Yes.
Just being able to go up there, especially on that, you know, reading that poetry and hear everybody, it was just real powerful. Like you mentioned, for example, like Tamia Holmes, she's one of the students and Dream Builders. She was the one with the poem about the little dark girl, the dark girl. And you know, she at first she was really shy about it, you know, but we were all like, your voice is very powerful. And like as you saw, we pretty much just ran up to her like she just won a Super Bowl. And like we literally it was just that powerful, and the message that she had was just that strong, and her words are so beautiful. And just being able to admire everyone's talents, it was just, like I said, it was just truly powerful. It's almost hard to describe, you know.
I mean, you had to be in that room to feel it, I think.
Yeah.
It was, there was just so much love and support, and like the audience was losing it. They really were cheering like it was a sporting event. It was so much fun to be there. And then I got a copy of the book. So you talked about being a published author. Is that how you feel now, that you are a published author? Like, you are in this book that was released as part of the Dreams Made Real event?
Oh, I am. And like I said, I'm very proud of it. Like, literally, I was hounding Mike, like, literally, after the event was over. I was like, I need more copies of this book. I wasn't even, like, I took, let's see, I got two copies right away. I had one for me and then one for my mom. And that's the one that she had everyone autographed after we did the book signing. And that's the one I took that one to school because I just needed my teachers to see it.
What did they say?
They were so moved by it because, mind you, it was so weird because I showed them literally like a week before like COVID hit. And like, it was great. So my teacher, Miss Teen, she was like, okay, Jared, I'm going to look over the weekend. Then after spring break, I'm going to bring it back. You can have the book. We didn't return to school for spring break.
You didn't come back after spring break, yeah.
For a month, and she kept reading it over and over. Well, my mom was like, oh my God, I need that book back, son. I need that book back. So I was like, Mom, she has to finish this book. And she sent it back through the mail, and her message, she was just like, it was so powerful. It was so beautiful. And then all my teachers, she told everyone in the entire school, the whole staff, was like, how can I purchase a book, you know? Miss Teen said your book was amazing. I want to purchase one. And it was just, it was really powerful because I kind of felt like a celebrity for a little minute. And just knowing that they all were acknowledging, you know, our program's work, like I said, it was truly wonderful.
I mean, you guys did look like celebrities. You were the celebrities of the event because they had you all lined up at the tables and you guys were like signing the books. I went through that line and you guys, a bunch of you signed my books. I'm actually looking at my copy of it right now. I've got it on my bookshelf. Let's talk for a second about the poem of yours that's actually in the book. You said that you wrote multiple poems with your words, but the one that made it in is Dying to Live. Talk about that title for a second.
At the time, it was just like a reflection of what was going on, you know, in the world. Like, for my people, even just with the program a whole, like I was saying, it taught me about accountability and being able to take my destiny into my own hands. I just kind of got tired of feeling like my people were kind of just living day to day, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like they were literally just living to see the next day. Is that all we're living and dying for? It's like, you know, just to wake up the next day and do it all over again instead of actually aspiring to, you know, achieve something greater or to escape this hell that we're in, you know? So that's all that it was for me. It was just a reflection.
Did it make you feel different to get it out there, right? So it seems like just reading it that it's very much rooted in a place of frustration and pain. Did those feelings change in any way once you finished the poem and got it out to the world?
They didn't necessarily change because, like I said, I'm not an angry person, so I can't necessarily say it came from a place of anger. It came from a place of truth. Mm. I'm going to always have my opinion. I'm going to always speak my truth no matter what. And that's how I feel like that to this day. I'm going to feel like that until things change. I mean, will they change? I don't know. But that's what's always going to be my stance on it. I felt good knowing that people actually were able to hear Gerald specifically, and they were able to hear how I felt about the situation. It made me feel good because I looked at it like, if nobody talks about it, then who will? Receiving the perspective of somebody, you know, such as myself, like I say, I was 17 years old at the time. I mean, it was just like, why not let it be me?
Has the poem sparked any conversations that you can remember where you're like, man, we wouldn't be talking about this if I hadn't written those words?
It sparked a few. I mean, like, I've talked to people at my school, some of my coaches on the coaching staff. And for me, I don't feel like the conversation wouldn't have necessarily happened, but my perspective on it probably was a lot brighter. And the message I was trying to convey to them was probably a lot brighter as well because of that poem. Like, for example, it was after the passing of George Floyd. My school, they had a march or whatever. It was like they had like an 8-minute kneel session because that's how long, you know, he was being suffocated before he passed away and stuff like that. And I didn't feel like attending that march, personally, from personal reasons. And my coach asked me, he was like, why didn't you if you don't mind, why didn't you attend the march? And I was just like, Coach, because I don't feel like it was as genuine as it could have been. I mean, I feel like it's very easy for people to host these events, you know, host these marchings and, you know, show their, you know, caring of the situation. But it's easy for you all because you're safe. You're in Melville, which is in South County. Well, me, right. I have to go back to the same reality that I spoke about within that poem. One thing I told him, like, I don't know if you remember over the summer when, what was his name, Captain Dorn, when he passed away. You remember that? During the that was like 2 minutes from my house, like a 2 minute walk from my house. It was around the corner. I told him that. I was like, Coach, that's my reality, man. So it was kind of hard for me to come here, you know, try to march with you all, protest with you all, when I don't necessarily even know where your intentions are or if they're, you know, as real as mine are, if that makes sense.
What was his response?
He was kind of moved, and you know, he actually teared up a little bit because for one, he didn't know that's literally where I came from. I mean, he knew I lived in the city, but he didn't know that's where I was. And then we had never had those types of conversations before. I mean, he knew I was a great kid. He knew I was a great athlete, but he didn't know that's how I felt as, you know, a young African-American male.
I mean, it sounds like the poem like opened that path for you too, to have that conversation. And I bet that changed him. I bet it changed him forever to think about it that way. And let's back up for just a second, because I'm really interested in what you had to say about the act of marching, how marching is the easy part. And you talked about how a lot of the students in Melville don't go home to where you go home. So what would you advise young people, say, in Melville, or who don't go home where you go home, who want to do something other than just march? Is marching enough? And if not, what should they be doing?
I personally don't feel like I have the place to tell people what they should be doing, because there are probably people who can tell me what I should be doing. Like, people telling me I need to do this, need to do that. But I know me personally, that's never been my approach. I feel like I can take that stance because after Dream Builders, knowing how we were, I'm in my community, you know, I speak to the people within my communities. I'm rehabbing homes in these urban communities, doing park cleanups. You know, we just had a park cleanup in Hyde Park during the summer. Knowing that I'm there making a change, it's hard for me to speak from the same place as somebody who hasn't really done anything or has kind of a closed mind, you know, or they think that what they're doing is necessarily enough. Because one thing that kind of frustrates me, I call them social media activists.
Mm-hmm.
On social media, like on Snapchat, they're posting these petitions and stuff like that. And then they have the nerve to tell people, oh, if you're not posting this petition, then you don't care about Black people, blah, blah, blah. I didn't post a single petition. But at the same time, you haven't been rehabbing a home over in Couples Place. Like, come on now. Like, you know, we can't speak from the same place because you're not there. I would just tell them to kind of be more mindful of what they're saying or the message they're trying to convey, and to be mindful of other people's participation within, you know, what we're all trying to stand for.
I admire you, sir, for saying that. You know, obviously no one person has the right to tell another person what to do, but you are probably one of the wisest people I've talked to in a while. And I don't even mean wisest young people, just like one of the wisest people. So I think your advice should definitely be taken seriously and at least listened to. So I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All that being said, I have to know, what's next for you? I know long term you're going to be a billionaire, but let's rewind a little bit. Like, what's the path to get there?
Really just holding myself accountable and trying to create as many opportunities for myself as I can, you know, trying to create those doors and those different avenues so I can have, you know, many paths to take. Because like before Dream Builders, you know, I pretty much thought, I knew I was very smart. I knew I was going to go to college, you know, but now,
where do you want to go? Have you thought about that? What grade are you in?
I'm a senior.
You're a senior. So yeah. This is like, you're starting to, have you started applying? Have you started looking around, applying for scholarships? How's all that going?
Well, definitely. I guess I can tell you now. I want to be a tiger.
You don't have to.
No. It's okay. I want to be a tiger. So I'm looking to the University of Missouri Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's because actually my passion is in journalism. So that's what I want to major in. And, you know, they have one of the best day schools in the entire country. And right now I'm just trying to find ways to be more in tune with my program. Actually, because I don't know if you were aware, we were at the news. I believe it was Channel 5. interviewed us through Zoom, me and Mike, just about the program, you know, what we've been able to accomplish. And everybody in my entire school, they saw that interview. And then after that, they just tried to find ways to, you know, connect me with my program, Dream Builders, as much as possible. So in second semester, one of my teachers, Miss Jennifer Sickic, she made a way. She created this thing called My Path. And it's basically going to give me an opportunity to, like, work with Dream Builders and receive credit for it during school hours. So it's almost like how students were when they had enough credits, they would just go to work, you know, the other half of the day. I'm going to receive credit for basically being in tune and doing work with Dream Builders. So it's real cool. And I'm actually glad they created those opportunities for me.
Well, and I feel like that used to be, I'm not that old, but I've been around education long enough to remember certain, like, patterns come and go. Like when I was a young person back in my day, that was not unheard of. Like, there were people who were interested in being teachers, and so they would go and, quote, work for the afternoon at a preschool. There were young, yes, like my sister did this. She was interested in health fields, and she went and worked at a nursing home. Like, that was just something that people did. So I think it's really cool to hear that schools are embracing this again. Like, you are out on the field, you're learning just as much doing what you're doing with Mike and Dream Builders, it sounds like.
And, you know, being able to, you know, with Mike and Neil presenting these opportunities to me, I'm just really grateful for them. You know, I'm looking forward to every summer just knowing that, okay, I'm going to be able to work with Dream Builders again, come back, be connected with all these people who I've grown to love. You know, even the side jobs they give for us, like Mike has had us doing lawn care every other week, you know, for these people in our neighborhood who get free lawn service or whatever, just working with them. Because there was never, like I said, a day where I woke up for Dream Builders during the summer, I was like, man, I don't feel like getting out of bed. I woke up every morning looking forward to walking up to, because we were working in SLU, I was looking forward to walking up to the hall that we were in and being able to sit down and just be connected with these people who share the same goals as me. You know, no matter the age, no matter, you know, the race, just, you know, they wanted to achieve something great. And that's the type of setting, you know, I look forward to being in my entire life, just around people who aspire to achieve greatness.
Powerful words from such a powerful young man. Anything else to add? Anything you wanted to share before we close up?
No. One thing, like I said, I'd just like to say I'm grateful for, you know, Michael Woods, Neil Richardson, you know, Robert McCauley, Eric Wilson, you know, everyone giving us this opportunity to thrive in Dream Builders. I'd like to thank my mom, Charnese Burton, my father, Daryl Alonzo Burton Sr., you know, for creating me and making me the, you know, powerful, amazing young man that I am. And I look forward to accomplishing so much more with Dream Builders.
Oh my gosh, that was beautifully stated. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Learn more about YWSTL at www.yourwordsstl.org. You can check us out on social media on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at yourwordsstl. Our intro sounds are by Joey Ferber, and these outro sounds are by Asia Berlin. Bye-bye.